Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, July 25th, 2011. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you from Anaheim, California. Today's show will inform, inspire, and encourage you. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Mistakes First-Time Authors Make and How to Avoid Them, with my guest, Lois Winson. But first, I'd like to welcome all of you, my listeners. Whether you're listening live on the phone, or you're over on the website, or in the chat room, or maybe you're listening to this show from the archives, I'm so happy that you made space in your schedule to join us. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell other people who can benefit. Thanks to modern technology, it's very easy to do that. All you have to do is go over to my show page at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. Right under my photo, you will see several ways to keep up with the show. If you click the follow button, you will get an announcement and a reminder in your email each week of each show. So that's probably the easiest thing to do. Now, have you ever wanted to write a book, but you hesitated because you didn't know how to get started? I know that a lot of you fit into this picture because you've told me. Maybe you're one of those people who's been writing pages and pages for months, maybe even years, but you don't know how to get your book published. If this sounds like you, I invite you to my workshop, How to Write a Nonfiction Book in 90 Days, Even If You're an Ordinary Person and Hated High School English. I will show you how to go from choosing your title to getting your book written quickly and market it effectively. Most important, in this workshop, I'm going to tell you how to start earning money from your book before it's even finished. The next live workshop is this coming Thursday, the 28th of July, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. in Fullerton, California, and that'll be at Cal State Fullerton. Get all the details and sign up over at www.abookin90days.com. Now, some of you are probably thinking, but wait a minute, I don't live in California. I can't get over to that live workshop. Well, that's no problem, because I have created a home study version of the workshop that you can learn from the same content as the live workshop in the comfort of your home and at your convenience. As soon as your payment is processed for that course, you'll be able to download it and get started right away. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Each week, I interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, you name it. We talk about a wide variety of topics because they all contribute to your lasting happiness. Today's episode is Mistakes First-Time Authors Make and How to Avoid Them, with my guest, Lois Winson, or she calls herself Editor on Tap. Lois's current 10-year career as a freelance book editor grew naturally from her experiences as chief copywriter and editor in regional and national advertising agencies. She's the published author of 3 e-books currently available on Kindle and has written for print, radio, screen, video, and more. She is proud to say that several of her first-time authors have won national awards for books she edited. Lois, whose website is editorontap.com, is based in San Diego, California, and she has clients throughout the United States and Canada. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today Lois Winson. Hi, Lois.
Hi, Sarah. How are you doing?
I am doing great, and I am so happy that you made time to be with me today, because I know there are a number of people who want to hear what you have to say. There are a lot of first-time authors out there, you know, so I hope they're all able to listen either now or later to learn from you. So I want to get started right away with your cute name, Editor on Tap. Why do you call yourself that?
Well, Flora, my interaction with clients is almost exclusively conducted by phone and email, so I feel I need to be available to them whenever they call. New authors especially tend to get nervous about their work and unsure of how to get started or what to do next. By being on tap for them, I can answer their questions, put their minds at ease, and help them develop the skills they need in today's fast-paced publishing environment.
Okay, editor on tap. I like that. So that means you make yourself readily available to your clients. That's good to know.
I had a gentleman call the other day. It was on a Sunday, and he apologized for interrupting the day. And I told him I'm on tap 24/7. So.
Ooh. That's wonderful. Well, your topic today is mistakes first-time authors make and how to avoid them. Why authors? Is there a difference between first-time authors and first-time writers?
Yes, I believe so, because while all authors are writers, not all writers are authors. And by that I mean many people start to write as a way to express themselves and be creative, and not all of them expect to publish. But whether you've written anything before or whether you simply have a great idea for a book, you run into a whole new set of circumstances. You need to remember that publishing is a business and that you're creating a product you hope someone will pay out hard-earned cash to buy. So suddenly your work is not just a nice, cute little piece of fiction or a nonfiction book that you had fun writing. It's something you have to present at its best and expect to market just as you would any product. That's kind of hard for creative people to get their head around because nobody who's creative likes to think of themselves or what they do as a product, but it's the truth. Today's publishers and distributors won't even look at your work unless it's pretty close to being ready for sale. And that means figuring out in advance who might want to buy such a book before you start to write. When I talk to people who want to be authors, I will often say to them, why did you write this book? And the answer is usually, oh, because I thought it would be fun. Well, that's great if there happens to be an audience for it. Not so great if it doesn't. And it also means you need to figure out how to use professional editors, agents, book designers, and so forth to make your book market ready. And that's true even if you plan to self-publish. And first-time authors frequently don't do that. They write for themselves, and they never consider the reality of the marketplace. So they may write a book that nobody wants to read or that would have such a small readership that there would be no point in trying to make a book out of it.
Wow, okay. Now, before we go on, I want you to tell listeners how they can reach you, because now that we know that you are available 24/7, that you're on tap to help startup writers, and probably you get writers who have published before and they still need your help on the second and third and on book. So how do listeners get a hold of you?
Well, they can call me by, they can go to my homepage on the web, which is www.editorontap.com. That's all one word, editorontap.com. And there are all kinds of pages there, pages with frequently asked questions, pages that tell you a little bit about what I do, and stuff on ebooks. And it's very easy to find. It's a very user-friendly site, and I hope you do go there and take a look.
Okay, and if they have questions or if they're ready to work with you, is there a link there on the site that they click, or do they call you?
Yes, they could call me. I actually left my home phone number there. So
okay.
I'm very easy to get in touch with. My home phone number and address is right on the website.
Would you give us the home phone number now and we'll just
have it on
the air? It is
858. I'm based in San Diego. 858-521-0844. I'll say it again.
Yes,
858-521-0844. 844.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Well, I know that we listen to what you have to share, that's going to come up. People are going to be thinking, oh, how can I get a hold of Lois? So I wanted to give them that information right up front. Let's move on, because I want to talk about if there is a difference between fiction or nonfiction in terms of the tips that you're sharing. Does it matter whether someone's writing fiction or nonfiction?
Surprisingly, it does, and I suspect that your workshop, Flora, will get into this.
Yes.
With a fiction book, you finish the book, and then you typically would do a synopsis of what the book is about. Because when you go to an agent or a publisher, they want to have a good sense of what the story is about. They usually want to read your first and last chapters. But when you do a nonfiction book, as Flora will tell you later this week, you can do a few chapters, set up a good solid outline with chapter headings, fill it in a little, and query first before the book is finished. And as Flora mentioned earlier, you can get paid before you finish your book, which is kind of a nice thing.
That is a very nice thing. So I'm glad that you made that distinction, because it's interesting, even though my workshop has the word nonfiction in the title, I do get authors who are writing fiction or have written fiction who want to take the workshop. And, of course, I welcome them to take it. I just make it clear to them that writing a fiction book is a little different animal from nonfiction, and you have to be aware of the difference.
Absolutely.
Now, I know that agents and publishers are busy people, and you just mentioned in your examples and your explanations, you mentioned about approaching them with a finished book for fiction versus chapters and an outline for nonfiction. Is there a way to improve your chances with them and with the reader, too?
Yeah, I'm going to talk mostly at this point about fiction. You need to be prepared to grab the reader's attention, whoever the reader is, on the first few pages. A lot of first-time authors and writers have a hard time getting started, and especially with fiction. And so to start their motors running, so to speak, they ease sort of gently into the story. And it, I have found in my editing that there's more than one manuscript that could throw out the first chapter entirely, and sometimes the first two or three, and get into the meat of the story at once. Because easing in means you put the background material in first, and those things can generally be fitted in as the narrative goes along. So you want to hit the reader, whoever it is, with something so intriguing, they're going to want to say, hey, this sounds interesting. I wonder what's next. So let me give you an example of what I mean. One of the best opening lines I ever read on a new piece of fiction was this one. The day I met Brandon, he gave me back my voice. Well, that just blew me away. Flora, what would you expect to find after an opening like that?
I would expect to learn who Brandon is and how he went about giving her back her voice, either literally or figuratively. Brandon is a guy, so I'm now wondering, was Brandon a new baby? Was Brandon a new boyfriend? But now I want to know how she lost her voice and what part Brandon played in giving it back. Did Brandon even do it intentionally, or did it evolve as their relationship grew? There are a whole bunch of questions come to mind.
Right, and so that's the kind of a book you would want to keep on reading. And, of course, you don't have to hit people with the first line all the time, but you have to put something on the first three pages that are important to the flow of the main storyline. Here's another excellent beginning for a book I just recently did. It was a political thriller, and it has already found an agent, and it's now seeking a major publisher. And here's the first paragraph. A bitterly cold morning on a late winter day in London, England, felt even colder to the man who was about to die. In the rubble of a vacant flat in Knightsbridge, he sat before a trio of black-hooded malcontents, his hands and feet bound to the chair. He stared in shock. unable to accept he was about to be beheaded. Wow.
Ew.
Well, if you like political thrillers and you are interested in what's going on politically,
yeah,
that paragraph sets the scene for what's to come. So mm-hmm. the reader, the agent, or the publisher will have an immediate sense of the tone of the book and who the market for it might be.
Mm-hmm.
They can also tell that the writing's been edited. It's clean, it's crisp, it's ready for publication. Flora, have you ever picked up a book and read page after page and just couldn't get into it?
Yes, very much so. I've read, well, I only give it so much time. So, yeah, I've gone into it page after page, trying to find a way to get into it, yes.
Well, if you picked the book up in a bookstore or you checked it out on Amazon, I bet you wouldn't buy it.
Nope. Nope. Sometimes I flip through also. If I start it and it doesn't grab me right away, I may flip to the middle, to the back, trying to see if there's some reason for me to continue.
Yeah.
And if there isn't, then, of course, I won't buy it. I won't even finish browsing it.
Right. That's why it's a really good idea to get the good stuff up in front.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. And, you know, what you've been sharing regarding fiction, and thanks for sharing those examples, I think that nonfiction writers can learn from your fiction techniques that you've just shared to get the reader in right away instead of giving a lot of background.
Absolutely.
That's
just a slightly different technique because you're writing facts rather than fiction.
Exactly.
But you can still put the interesting stuff up front.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, are there certain problems that almost every new writer and author seem to commit?
Oh, yes, definitely. Most writers, even the good ones, tend to write too much.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the books I edit are 10 to 15% shorter after I get through with them. Writers repeat themselves, and they often add unimportant material hoping to flesh out the narrative. And frequently, as a writer, you'll fall in love with some little vignette that you've written, but you can't afford to do that. You can't fall in love with your own copy.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to ask yourself, clinically, does this move the narrative forward? Does this add character development and understanding of my leading characters? Does it help the reader visualize why and where the action's taking place? If it doesn't, you might be well to get rid of it. Just cut it out, no matter how charming you think it is. Clean, tight writing, that's what makes a page turner. No fluff, no filter.
That's wonderful. And you know what you are doing, what you're sharing with us, is convincing me, and I hope the listeners more and more, the importance of having an editor. Because one of the things that self-published writers often think is that they have to do everything themselves, and that's absolutely not true. They very much need an editor like you, and you're proving just now why they need one. Because we need it because we can't edit our own work.
We can't.
Would be able to see it.
Even editors need editors, and I have mine.
Now, what about the style of writing? Do you have some tips for that?
Yeah, lots of them. Many new authors feel, especially authors of fiction, feel
mm-hmm.
they need to make their narrative more literary so that it's classy. So to do so, they use fancy words and awkward prose to try to give the work a more intellectual spin. Now, here's a sentence I'm sure the writer thought was very high class. I'm going to quote. He was enraptured by her glorious azure orbs and her sinuous form. Well, we can figure out what that means, but it doesn't come off. He would like it, the writer wanted it to come off sexy and intriguing, but what it comes off is funny and ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just say, he was captured by her sky blue eyes and her lovely body.
Mm-hmm.
Plainer language the reader can relate to usually works best. Your prose should flow so smoothly that readers will feel, I could write that, but of course we couldn't.
They couldn't.
No. You know, the very essence of poetry in most commercials is putting your idea out in the shortest number of words that just distill down the essence of what you want to say. It's a case for where less is more. Mm-hmm. Now, I just finished personally reading a book that won a prestigious international literary prize. The language was so comfortable to read, and yet it was so moving, I felt the writer was in the room with me, talking like a longtime friend. I'm already sure I'll be buying more of his books.
Hmm. Wow. That's wonderful praise for that book, and that's certainly something I would want to aspire to, and I'm sure any author who's listening, aspiring author, would want to aspire to that, to get that reaction from the reader, that it was so smooth that you felt like this author was in the room. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know.
Excuse me,
I don't know who said it, but somebody said it's easy to write 5,000 words. It's hard to write 50 words.
Well, I know that I think it was James Michener, who said that he's not a very good writer, but he's a great rewriter. Because so much goes into, like you say, rewriting, because you're tossing out so much that you had in before that just is wasted, is not advancing the story, is not interesting.
From an editor's standpoint, that's called polishing. And
yes.
I do a lot of that. There's a lot of in writing and polishing of prose so that it's crisp and shiny and shines like a brand new penny.
That's wonderful. Now, are there other stylistic helps that you can offer? You've told us to keep it simple, less is more, and avoid writing what we think is literary style.
Yes. Oh, the other thing we shouldn't be writing is current slang and cliches, the kind of things that we say when we talk to our friends. And when we write conversation, it's okay to use slang or cliches a little bit. But when you write a narrative sentence, it's a no-no. So it's acceptable to have one of your characters say, for instance, it was cold as ice being a cliche. But in a narrative form, a better way would be to say it was bone-chilling cold. So, it again, on a narrative sentence, you might write, it was worth a good try, rather than a sentence I just found on a manuscript where he said he thought he'd give it a whirl.
That's
kind of trite and cliched, and we don't want to do that. And also, certain people have pet words in their speech that seem to come out in their writing very frequently. One of my pet words is really, and I have to watch that because that word just pops up all the time. And pet words that I see new authors use are very, possibly, just, kind of. Those are words that don't improve your copy at all. It just weakens them. Mm-hmm. If you say, the doctor saw the sick woman, you don't have to say she was very sick, because the story that you're weaving around those words will give that impression anyway. And when you say that something is possibly or kind of, it sounds like you can't make up your mind. And, of course, as a writer, you should be able to do that.
Oh, my goodness, that's true. I'm nodding and relating to so much of what you say. Now, what about grammatical mistakes? Did you run across a lot of that?
Yeah, I did. There's a certain one of the most egregious grammatical mistakes that authors make, and this includes authors who've been published, is what we call modifying phrases. Mm-hmm. Let's say you want to write about a woman you met. She has short, curly hair, and her name is Anna. So you might write, I met a woman with short, curly hair named Anna. Does that sound right to you?
Yes.
Well, it's not, because it sounds like her hair is named Anna. I met a woman with short, curly hair. Hair named Anna.
Oh, the hair. Okay, I got
right.
it. I got it.
So, and those things sneak in. So when you use a modifying phrase, it's important to put the phrase right next to the word or words you want to modify. So the correct way for that sentence should be, I met Anna, a woman with short, curly hair.
Wow. And you,
now there's no question about what you mean. Here's another one. I'm going to throw it at you, Flora.
Okay. Okay.
The girl
Uh-oh.
Ran out the door who was my best friend.
Okay. You're not going to catch me this time. So it sounds like the door is the best friend.
Right, right. So how are we going to say that one? We're going to say the girl who was my best friend ran out the door. So,
you know what that points out to me is that you hear a lot of people giving advice about write the way you talk, but that's not true because in both of those examples, if we were in conversation with someone, they may well understand what we mean, but when you have it in writing, you have to be absolutely positive that it's clear. So you
right.
can't write the way you talk.
Things look a lot more serious when they're printed on a page.
Now, you haven't mentioned spelling errors, but I suppose with spell check operating on most computers, people think it's not a problem.
Well, it is a problem because as long as the word that you're writing is spelled correctly, a spell check isn't going to take it. For example, she put her clothes in the closet. If you spelled it C-L-O-S-E, clothes is a word,
yes.
And your computer doesn't know that it's the wrong word for that. It's just a word, and it's spelled correctly.
Right.
So it's not going to catch it. And, for example, another one, if you type fast and you're in the heat of creation and you said, he went to the staple, S-T-A-P-L-E, to feed his
mm-hmm.
horse.
Mm-hmm.
Spell check isn't going to know the difference between staple and stable.
Right.
So
right.
you need to do proofreading, and also you need to keep a dictionary handy, and a lot of writers don't do that because some words are not spelled the way you think. I had one author who has 4 published books now, and she wrote that she went to the deli to buy some cold slaw because that's what she thought it was. And, of course, spell check didn't catch that one either.
Of course not. Yeah. Oh, that's true. And so it's absolutely important not to rely on spell check is what you're saying.
Yes, you need to keep a dictionary there. And also if you're using a word that you're not totally sure of, please look it up in the dictionary. Because nothing looks sillier than misusing an impressive word, because then impressive becomes silly.
Yes. What mistake would you say is the most harmful to make and the easiest to fix?
The mistake that's most harmful to make and easiest to fix is using verb tenses wisely. I know they don't teach much grammar in school anymore, but they used to. And just this week I was editing a first-time author manuscript, which was really very good in many ways. But the author had started almost every single chapter with words like being, seeing, doing. Those were all subjunctive endings words. Like he would say, being that I was in the hospital.
Oh.
So the fix is, which sounds extremely amateurish. And the fix for that is very simple. All you need to do is drop the subjunctive word and get right into the sentence.
Right,
so instead of his writing, being that I was late at the office, I missed the meeting, he could write, I was late at the office, so I missed the meeting. And instead of seeing she never got ready on time, we had to wait, you could write, she never got ready on time, so we had to wait. You don't need those first two ing ending words. You need to be sure that the words you use just move the prose along and doesn't slow it down. So
I want to thank you. I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're going to be cut off in a minute.
Oh,
Lois,
my goodness.
My goodness, time went fast. EditorOnTap.com is the way to reach Lois. We're at the end of today's show, would you believe?
No.
And I know that people have been helped And I want you to rush over to Lois's site and be sure to use her wonderful services. I know I'm going to do that. I invite all of you to return next week, August 1st, 2011, at 11 a.m. for another informative and exciting show. This is Flora. I've been coming to you from Anaheim, California. I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week. And remember,
color your life happy.
Color.
Every day you can choose. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
Color your life happy.